Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the First Bank of Nigeria First Half 2012 Financial Results Conference Call. Following the formal presentation by the First Bank of Nigeria management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. BC Anasanya, Managing Director. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I'd like to welcome you all to this conference call. My name is BC Anasanya, Group Managing Director. I have with me on this conference call Remy Otolami, Chief Officer.
Good afternoon.
I have Bayo, CFO, Bayo Adelabu.
Good afternoon.
I have Onche, the Chief Strategy Officer.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. This presentation will be slightly shorter than our previous presentation, so we can give more time for questions. On slide 4, we have a review of both the global economy and the domestic environment. And that shapes the circumstances under which we operated first quarter of 2012. And this conference calls to put some facts behind the numbers prepared for the first half of the year by First Bank of Nigeria. We operated in an environment which the global economy itself is shrinking, with forecast GDP growth rate declining from 3.8% to 3.5% going forward. In the Nigerian environment, we operated under cost pressures, in which oil prices sometimes fell below the $100 price at some point, but gladly it slightly back above $100 today. The impact of this, of course, the need for federal government to preserve exchange rates and also defend the foreign position of government. Inflation inched up slightly to 12.9%, and that also presents some danger and challenges with fiscal authorities. The focus of the fiscal authorities, therefore, has been to fight to ensure that there is exchange rate stability. This has resulted in some policies coming out of the Central Bank of Nigeria aimed at essentially spending the exchange rate. Some of these policies include the increased cash reserve requirement for banks from 8% to 12%, and also the reduction in net position from 3% to 1%. The impact of the combination of these policy pronouncements from Central Bank likely to aggravate or increase interest rates in the bank sector, so that the balance that balance is very yesterday and interest rates in the There was also during the period restrictions on recapitalization of foreign subsidiaries coming from Central Bank, and also the Eurozone crisis, also a factor of concern in terms of shrinking credit lines to some Nigerian institutions. The good news, however, is that part of all the operated and environment and the impact of the not making this system. Going forward, we do not need major impact on our position. I would believe that the numbers posted in the first half of the year will be sustained in the second half of the year. Also, now, going back to slide 5, this is a summary of our performance for this year. We had a very strong year-on-year growth thanks of the underlying business trend. I will take slide 5 together with slide 6. I will make reference to numbers as I speak on. We had increased volume during the period, and on slide 6, we had a GDP growth during the period and a 27% increase in our gross earnings in the first half of the year relative to the first half of 2011. Our non-interest income, which is essentially CDs, was increased by 25% year-on-year, whilst we achieved a 13% growth of hitting the 2.4 trillion naira deposit mark during the other day. That puts us number one position as the largest deposit bank in the country. The beauty of this also is that we're able to defend our low-cost deposit base, and so savings and current accounts and low-cost deposits still constituted about 82% of our total deposits, in spite of the increasing interest rate environment. We also achieved greater market penetration, and we concentrated extensively on the use of alternative channels during the period. The result of this is an increase in the number of our business stations to 769 as at the end of June 2012. In the same way, we believe that our current ongoing efforts will be to continue to reinforce our transformation agenda and ensure that in San Francisco we are able to defend our leadership position in the banking industry. Slide six essentially is a snapshot of the key performance highlights of the bank, some of which is further detailed by the CFO during his presentation. But in summary, we had a profit before tax of ₦54 billion during the current year. Now I will hand over to the CFO to see details of the financial aspects of this presentation. Bye.
So good afternoon. My name is Barry Adelabo, CFO for the group. I'll be taking you through the slide 7 to 23, adding more color to the financials posted by the bank for the first year of 2012. Slide 7 actually shows the build-up to the group's half-year profitability, which basically shows an impressive growth in revenue, as James just mentioned, especially coming from non-interest income, which grew by 35% year-on-year. This is actually in line with our strategic focus on income diversification, moving more away from interest income to fees and commission-based income. There was also a decline in impairment position year-on-year, reflecting improvement in our credit quality. The higher growth in expense reflects deposit volume as interest expense, deposit volume growth during the period, as well as rising trend of cost of funds, the environment we operated the first half of the year. PBT stood at $44 billion under the NGAAP format of IFRS, while it is $64 billion under IFRS. We are going to provide a completion of that towards the end of my presentation. Slide 8 basically shows the earnings growth of the bank, which stood at 26% year-on-year, which came mainly from non-interest income, like I said earlier, and it reflects the higher business volumes, increased transaction velocity, which were driven by the improved customer service in the bank during the first half of the year. There are also the introduction of more innovative products and the impact of our alternate channels driving business volume during the first half of the year. This is actually what led to more traction coming from our non-interest income for the first half of the year. And on slide 9, there is improvement in treasury contribution interest income, thus reducing the dominance of loans in interest income contribution. This moved to 31% from 70% of last year, while contribution from interest on loans dropped from 73% last year to 4%, which means that we actually have more of treasury revenue than we used to have. We are also able to sustain the interest margin at 7.5%, despite of the high interest rate environment where we completed the first half of the year. This came mainly from our ability to improve the average yield on assets from 9% last year to 9.7%. And of course, the mix of our deposit liabilities also, to some extent, insulated us from the major impact of the rising interest environment. Cost of funds soared, just like all this, to 2.4% from 1.6% in 2011. And on non-interest income growth, we recorded this growth in COC income, letters of credit commission, money transfer income, and other credit-related. And these are a result of increased business volumes and transaction velocity that we witnessed during the first half year. Slide 10, why we said so much about revenue and cost of funds. On operating overhead, it moved up by 29% year on year, comparing first half year of 2012 to first half year of 2011. While our cost control strategy yielded positive results during the period, growth in cost basically was driven by expansion in our business locations and deployment of more alternative channels, ATM, POS, to take advantage of our customers and improve business activities from customers. We add additional 80 business locations from last half year to date, and these have staff costs and overhead implications, which basically led to the growth in interest revenue. growth in operating overhead. Cost income ratio inched up a bit due to this growth in expense to 62% from 60%. But we believe that as these new locations contribute more to revenue, the cost to income ratio will definitely improve. So we're still sticking by our guidance of 60% cost income ratio for the rest of the year. On slide 11, loan loss provision declined from 14 billion to 10.6 billion. The CRO will provide more information on this in our presentation, which is basically after mine. So I'll move on to slide 12. With PBT, that's profit before tax, growing by 22% year on year, our return on average equity stood at 22.8% for the first half year, which actually exceeded our guidance, while our return on average assets stood at 2.5%. Net earnings ratio of the bank stood at 4.58 as at end of June 2012. Now moving to slide 13, which basically talks about the breakdown of our funding. And as usual, deposits remains the highest contributor to the funding of the bank at 73%. This is an improvement over last year, where it contributed 66%. Deposits actually grew by 30% year on year, despite the competitive environment where we operated. After this, current and savings accounts still remain the largest contributor of about 82% to our deposits, which is why we're able to sustain low cost of funding during the period. However, tenor deposits, which grew by an absolute amount of 130 billion between last year and this year, became more expensive, and the increase in our cost of funds was out here. I'm going to skip slide 14, which is going to talk about the SBU's contribution to deposit liabilities, save our time. Now move to slide 15, where we have the major ratio. Our capital adequacy ratio remained 15.29% as at the end of first half year, while the Tier 1 ratio was 14.35%. Liquidity ratio is 50%, which is far in excess of the regulatory minimum of 30%. And we believe that with higher profit retention and further de-risking of our balance sheet, we believe that we have adequate capital to fund our planned business growth in short term. So slide 17 to 23, basically analyze the results based on the IFRS format presentation. And the summary or the highlight of the results is on slide 17. I will not really go through this line by line, but the key items here is that we recorded 26% growth in gross earnings and 1.8% growth in profit before tax, with a capital adequacy ratio of 26.3 and 30% growth in deposit volume to 2.4 trillion. Slide 18 shows the build up to profitability under the IFRS, which is a profit before tax under IFRS at 64 billion compared to 44 billion under the NGAAP format. The slide 19 actually shows the movement in major performance parameters, gross earnings, net interest income, impairment charge, and so on and so forth. While slide 20 also shows the comparison of 2011 and 2012 based on IFRS financial statements on major performance parameters. Key among these is actually our cost income ratio, which stood at 58.3% in 2012 as against 59.3% in 2011, while return on average equity was 5.1% as against 11.2% in 2011, while capital adequacy stood at 26.3%. Then slide 21, 22, and 23 actually gave us some information on the items of reconciliation between the IFRS and the NGAAP format of our financial system. That's on slide 21. While 22 and 23 talks about the restatement that we have on our December 2011 financials prepared on IFRS. And my little comment here is that given the fact that this is our first year of IFRS adoption, majority of the models on impairment and evaluation are still subject to refinement and validation by auditor, the Central Bank of Nigeria, and the Financial Reporting Council. So we expect that there will be some restatement to some of these figures that we continue to refine and evaluate. This will be validated by our thoughtful IFRS audit being currently undertaken on our Q2 numbers as part of our IFRS conversion plan for financial year 2012. As such, we have taken an ultra-conservative view of our portfolio position, and this will be concluded with the audit of the Q2 numbers. I will hand you over to the CRO now to take you through slides from the slide 24 on risk management. Thank you.
I'd like to take you from slide 25, and assuming that you've all had a chance to read it, I'd just like to highlight a few points. On slide 25, I'd like to say that at the group level, Q-on-Q growth in net loans is just under 10%, while year-to-date growth is approximately 17%. We do, however, maintain our full-year guidance of 15%, as we do expect paydowns during the year, in the latter half of the year, which would compensate for the growth we have currently. Much of the year-to-date growth, however, although the bank is growing, is from the subsidiaries. First of all, we incorporated our subsidiary BIEC for the first time in our financials, and then we do have growth which is dollar and sterling denominated in the SBN UK. So as a result, we have both growth in absolute terms, in terms of the volume of business they're doing, and we do have some exchange factors that come into play as well. The portfolio, besides that, remains largely unchanged in terms of both aging and type. If we move on to slide 26, you'll see that the sector and SBU breakdown also remains pretty much flat. The major point I'd like to discuss is the consumer retail portfolio, which year on year has seen growth. And this is primarily in terms of the change in the portfolio mix in the area of personal loans. That might be a cause of concern, but I'd like to point out that the bulk of those loans are what we call group personal loans against salary, where basically with the knowledge of the employer and the commitment of domiciliation of salary, we do make personal loans against salary to staff. These staff, on the whole, the employers that we focus on tend to be the larger corporates, the multinationals and other large players within the economy. Moving on to slide 27, talking about asset quality. The NPL coverage has declined to just under 100%, however, the cost of risk has also fallen to 1.6%. The increase you will notice in the non-performing loan ratio from 2.7% in the first quarter to 3.3% in the second quarter is largely due to the substandard classification of a couple, or maybe I say three or four large loans in the oil and gas sector of the corporate portfolio. But we do believe that those should be remediated in the next 3 to 6 months. Another point that jumps out at you would be the public sector NPL of 3 billion, which relates to a facility that was under review by an incoming administration. But we have looked at that, and the matters have been resolved. So again, we expect that to be liquidated in the next couple of months. The other area that you would notice what appears to be a significant increase in the non-performing loans is within the private banking SBU. But despite the fact that they've got a 3.8% NPL ratio from nothing in March, I would like to point out to you that the number we're talking about is actually sub $2.5 million. And it's largely due to concerns over three major borrowers. That takes it on slide 28. There really is nothing much to say. It remains pretty much as usual, and we remain focused on remedial management. But taking you back to slide 11, where the CFO pointed out that I would talk about the loan loss provisioning, I'd just like to say that the provision of 10.6 billion in the quarter, though high, reflects the classification of some of the oil and gas assets, as I mentioned earlier, and also the migration of a few others into the doubtful category. But most of these are due to the ongoing delays in the payment of the oil of the petroleum subsidy and the ongoing investigations. But we are comfortable with our clients, and we believe that much of these would clear up in the next quarter as the issues are dealt with. Thank you very much. I'll pass over to Onche, who will take you through the strategy session.
I'm beginning from page 30. A quick update on the group restructuring. As you're aware, we're moving towards a holding company structure, and we expect it to conclude in the third quarter of this year. The diagram here illustrates how the group is going to be organized. Of note in this period is the fact that we have actually gained official approval from the Securities and Exchange Commission for the new structure, and also waivers on potential double taxation that could have occurred from the tax authority. We've also secured a delisting waiver from the NSC, so we're always on track following an EGM that's going to be held prior to implementation. If you move on to page 31, this is a quick overview of subsidiaries. The three strategic areas we focus on are those that are international, our investment banking and asset management business, and our insurance businesses. We've seen strong growth across each of these in the period under review, 27% growth in PBT in our UK subsidiary, 153% growth in our gross premiums in insurance, which is very encouraging indeed. In the UK, we continue to shift the mix of our business away from the traditionally dominant FI business towards the higher margin corporate business, trade finance, structured finance, etc. We're driving the implementation of a global private banking framework, leveraging our private bank in Nigeria and the UK, and offering a very compelling proposition to our customers and choice of products. In addition, we are seeking wider regulatory approval for custody of investment products, which will increase the speed and consistency of client sign-up in the UK. In investment banking and asset management, we continue to finalize integration and harmonization of the IBAM entities. As you recall, we had several subsidiaries that came together to form IBAM, FBN Capital, First Fund, our securities business, etc., trustees. So that's ongoing, and it's been very good success. There's also been a very thorough look at processes and systems and harmonizing across the entities, and that's ongoing. We continue to strengthen retail, institutional, and international distribution platforms in IBAM, and we've just launched very successful, so far, FBN money market and fixed income funds that have been well received by the market, and we continue to push those out aggressively. In life assurance, we continue to work closely with our joint venture partner, Sanlam of South Africa, in expanding the retail distribution of our business, leveraging the bank, and also opening direct agency outlets in select commercial centers. We are also leveraging the bank on the public sector business to sell group life more deeply. And we are expanding the scope of our bank assurance partnerships and products as well, including products such as mortgage protection of clients. Moving on, I'm going to skip the next two slides, which are really just a recap of our financial, non-financial priorities and SBU priorities, which you might have seen before. We go to page 34. Just a few highlights on our financial priorities and non-financial priorities for the period, pages 34 and 35. With respect to low-cost liability, in spite of a slowdown in the market overall in terms of liability generation and the prevailing high interest rate environment, we did manage to grow our collections business for the period by 64% through via product innovations and a strong focus on customer acquisition, both in the private and public sectors. We've also expanded our branch distribution network significantly, which I'll talk about a bit later. OPEX containment, one of the big elements in this area is basically our centralized processing center strategy. We've expanded coverage to include another 85 branches, clocking a total of 235 to date, and we're in line for 400 by year end. With respect to fees and commissions increases, you will have seen that we've had very healthy growth in this area, now at parity with our peers, in terms of FNC contribution to total net revenue. FNC income was up 48% year-on-year, driven by COT, which is the largest category at 27%, LC commissions at 44%, and a whopping 145% increase in remittances. We've signed new partnerships with the remittance funds with WIA, for example, offering better benefits to our customers around the world to leverage these services. On slide 35, a few highlights of our non-financial priorities and what we've done. In talent management, we earned accolades as the best place to work for the first time in line with our employer of choice aspirations. This is something we're indeed very proud of, and we continually see a flood of CVs and applications to come to First Bank. So become an employer, a premium brand in terms of employment. We completed the performance-based staff retention exercise, which affected about 8% of staff, which will have the benefit of improving staff productivity and allow us to upscale our talent within the institution. The brand transformation continues aggressively. We've rebranded 80 branches in total as part of an initiative to improve the ambience and customer experience. We've seen triple-digit growth in e-product sign-up, greater product awareness and just simple point-of-sale advertising we've leveraged. We've also launched a very successful program switch campaign building on our Did You Know campaign, moving across the purchase funnel from the awareness state to now consideration and trial, which is the emphasis. On service excellence, we received very strong ratings in terms of our moving up the ranks on the recent independent KPMG survey in the top three on corporate banking and in the top quartile with respect to retail banking. We've introduced a number of new services on our ATM and internet banking platform, including intern intra-bank transfers on ATMs, including transfers to customers who are to clients who are not actually customers at First Bank, so cardless transfers. We've also deployed multilingual options on our IVR contact center. We have a few highlights on the following pages in terms of specific initiatives. I'm just going to take one of these, which is on slide 36, our branch network expansion. You will have noticed, no doubt, that we are in an expansion mode. This is very much in line with our strategy as being the preeminent retail bank and our belief in the potential of retail in Nigeria. There are 50 million unbanked adults presently. We see rapid growth in this area in coming years as the middle class grows, as strong urbanization occurs, not just to major urban hubs like Lagos and Abuja, but also the second tier cities. You've seen strong per capita income growth in Nigeria. And there's obviously a very strong latent credit demand, which has not been met. So we think there's a strong market opportunity. There's also, you will have seen, relative to other nations, Nigeria is also deeply underpenetrated in terms of branches, branches per 10,000, per 100,000. Nations like India, South Africa, and even other African nations that are more comparable to ours. We believe that branches remain the primary sales outlets in which customers initiate transactions. They may use a wide variety of channels of service, but they still want an in-person introduction to the bank. And there's still that process that occurs in branches. We believe that there's benefits in terms of the broader network for our existing client base in terms of convenience and also decongesting our existing branches. And we think that the economics are compelling. A recent analysis we did of a number of branches done over the years shows that we have a greater than 40% IRR for our investments on branching. So it's been a very strong focus this year. We've increased the network by 45 years to date, and we're on track to have a total portfolio of 777 branches and quick service points by the end of the year. This is not including business locations that our subsidiaries have, etc. It's worth mentioning one other thing, which is that our QSP format is significantly cheaper than the conventional branches we've built in the past at 40% of the CapEx, and this is the way we're pushing it. We are also in tandem working on bringing to profitability branches that are not profitable. I'm happy to announce that we have 6% or fewer of our branches that are loss-making branches. And in each of these, there's very targeted remedial actions before closure is considered, including movement of the location, streamlining hours in rural areas, streamlining staffing, etc. So there's a very strong emphasis in this area, and we are very proud of our achievements today. I'll hand it over at this point to the Group Managing Director to wrap up.
Thank you. Okay, I'll wrap up with slides 40 and 41. In quick summary, in spite of the turbulent environment in which we operated, we're still able to continue to forge ahead on our transformation journey. On the bottom of slide 40, we see both financial priorities and non-financial priorities. But essentially, we will continue to structure for growth, profitability, and efficiency. We will continue to focus on synergy and cross-selling, particularly in the bank, the investment bank, and the life assurance business, for sensitive clients. General insurance assignment. On slide 41, we tried as much as possible to identify our core focus areas as we move on in the second half of the year. The objective essentially is to consolidate our leadership position in the industry. We started first by saying that we will consolidate our leadership and then extend that leadership to areas in which we were presently at that time not full control. I'm proud to say that we are both very close to achieving that objective, to close the gap in terms of profitability, and we are also bridging the gap in terms of return on equity and other efficiency ratios. We moved up the ladder, the customer satisfaction score survey from KPMG, and we are proud to say that we have seen the numbers that we set for ourselves going forward. Our priority area to consist is structuring for business growth, improved efficiency, and marginalization. We will also continue to improve on our asset quality supported by our revamped managerial process and robust governance framework. The impact of all these performances in the first half of the year has been a significant increase in our return to shareholders, sorry, return on equity, 25%, which is significantly above 20% mark that guided on at the beginning of the year. We believe also that with this performance and the price to book value, present price to book value of First Bank at less than 1%, at less than 1%, we believe that significant undervaluation of First Bank stock. We also believe that based on our current performance, it should be sustained. The fact of stress environment, increasing stress environment, I think it's time for us, for the market to take advantage of the evaluation of best stocks in relation to any and the first valuation of stock. Let me wrap up by also confirming that we intend to roll out our mobile money business in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and this is part of our market penetration strategy of keeping market share in retail and lower percentage of the market. That's the end of Thank you.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute button on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take the first question from Rele Adesina from Stanbic.
Good afternoon, all. Thanks a lot for the presentation. I apologize if you've already touched on anything I'm about to ask, but the line wasn't too clear. Just on the release that you put out with the results, there was reference made to a portion of your interest-earning assets being swapped for a much lower yield in the current period relative to the first quarter. It would be helpful if you could just give a bit of color on that. Also, I wanted to get a sense of the collections business and a better sense of what was driving it. Is it an overall sort of growth in the opportunity in that space? Is it that you're taking market share? Just a bit more insight into what's driving that would be helpful. I am also interested to know, as far as public sector deposits go, what your view is on the potential risk to the balance sheet in the event of a deterioration in government finances. It seems to be a topic of constant discussion at the present time, and I just wanted to get a sense of the nature of those public sector deposits and any vulnerabilities you might see in that space. And lastly, just a sense of how things are going in DRC and whether or not the CBN's position on capital export for sort of international expansion has any bearing on your thoughts on that whole exercise. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me take the first question on the lower portion of our earning assets portfolio. Towards the end of last year and early part of this year, we had to switch and sell our CWIP loan to AMCON, for which we received Naira bonds. Now, the CWIP loan itself was a dollar denominated facility. And so, despite the fact that we received Naira for that facility, we had to switch and convert part of that Naira to dollars, close our dollar position, dollar funding position. So, what we had, therefore, in the second quarter of 2012, the situation in which we successfully $14 to close the position. However, the yield on dollar assets definitely less than the yield to have on Naira assets to enjoy cost of up. That's the tradition in the first of that. But the first of that continues to optimally price our dollar for foreign currency assets to take advantage of price opportunities in the market. On public sector deposits, we do expect that the CSA, the implementation of the CSA, that account, policy of Federal Ministry of Finance and Federal Government will, to some extent, affect size of public sector deposits. But that's why we continue to make sure that as those funds come back into the system to support spending, payments of salaries, payments of contractors, we need to improve the handshake between our public sector business and the rest of the business such that we're able to track those flows and come back to the sectors of the economy. Either through payments of salaries, contractors, and so on. Yes, there will be some impact, but in the overall vision, the public sector components of our total deposit that will be affected, if at all, a very small percentage. We then expect that this will improve on this through the implementation of improved handshake between the public sector and other sectors. That also explains why we are a little bit more aggressive in our branch rollout to make sure that we deepen market penetration in this segment of the market. But the other segment has something very important. I would believe that we have real value proposition as banks that are expected to be the sector. A combination of all these proactive actions leads to the impact of any like reduction in public sector support. Now, on the impact of the central bank guidelines on recapitalization of foreign subsidiaries as it relates to our BRC subsidiaries and as it relates to our expansion strategy, let me confirm that our BRC bank has fully capitalized at the moment and we do not sustain, and there is no need whatsoever for us to recapitalize that. The same thing also goes for our bank in the UK. However, in the unlikely event that there will be in the medium to long term need for increased capitalization, we are looking at other options which include reduced dividend payouts from subsidiaries and other forms of support if this arises. But for now, we are not under any pressure whatsoever and we are not negatively affected by that pronouncement. Let me clarify that that pronouncement on its own only speaks to recapitalization of existing subsidiaries. I do not see, and we have analyzed externally, that this affects your foreign into new ventures and investments. In the first instance, it's a critical requirement that the central bank approval addresses any new subsidiaries. And so long as you get that approval, that capitalization will not in any way be affected. I believe I've answered those three questions. By then, most experts.
Thanks very much. That was helpful.
The next question comes from Godfrey Mwanza from Pioneer Fund.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I have sort of two sets of questions, and they all pertain to the loan book. So it's mostly a question for risk. The first is to do with the retail loan book. And the first part of that is, in terms of your retail banking non-performing loans, could you give a breakdown of that? For specifically, out of the 21 billion naira, which on slide 27, how much of that is SME, how much of that is individual? That's the first question. The second question is, how much of the personal loan book, which I calculate to be about 131 billion naira, how much of that is overdrafts? And out of interest, is there a significant weighting towards individuals working at First Bank? Are you pushing products within the organization? That's the second part. And the third part for the retail loan book is, could you give a sense of how many sort of individual loan accounts you have outstanding, and sort of the average size of the loans and the typical lending rates that you have, or average lending rates that you have on those products? So that's for the retail loans. I suppose I'll stop there, but I have a follow-up question, but it's to do with the corporate loans, and particularly oil and gas downstream. But we can deal with this one first, if you don't mind.
Okay. I don't have all the numbers that you're looking for, but I'd say that in terms of the breakdown of our retail, you wanted to break down the retail non-performing loans between SMEs and individuals. I think the bulk of the portfolio that we classify as retail is SMEs. Obviously, the loan amounts in that segment are larger than to individuals. So I'd say if we take the quantum, the SMEs are higher in quantum within the portfolio than there are the individuals. I also believe, off the top of my head, that the bulk of the NPLs, again, purely because of size, the value, asset value, is largely in the SME space.
Okay.
Moving on to the actual product, how much is overdraft? In the retail space, we tend not to do that much. In the personal and individual space, very, very little in the way of overdraft. In the SME space, I would say on average maybe 10% of the facilities to any one organization would be overdraft. Our focus in that segment is on their trade business and more structured products. So we tend not to do overdraft as a major product. How many individual accounts I have? Off the top of my head, I can't tell you. A couple of 100,000, I would imagine, but I don't know the exact number. Are they largely first bank staff? No. When I talk about DPLAS, the group personal loan structures, I'm talking about loans to staff of other organizations. I'm talking of staff to Shell, MTN, the majors, basically, and also to cooperative organizations within some of those large ministries and other organizations. But basically, we're taking people in large groups where we've got the knowledge, at the very least, sometimes the consent and guarantee of the employer, but definitely a domiciliation of the salaries, which we then can track and make sure the payments are deducted at source. The average size of a loan to an individual would depend by and large on the product. On the personal loans against salary, I don't think there's anybody who does much above 10 million naira. However, if you do move up to the mortgage product, the average would be somewhere between, I'd say, 25 and 50 million naira. Rate, looking at something above 20, but not too far. In the early 20s, I would say, is an all-in rate that you can expect. I think I jotted down all the notes you're talking. I think I covered everything you asked. Did I?
Yeah, you did. You did. Thank you very much. I'll just quickly move on to the questions about the corporate loan book, and particularly oil and gas. So on page 28, you've said deterioration in corporate banking, problems with a few significant exposures, which are being strategically sorted out. Could you please define what you mean by significant in terms of as a quantum or as a percentage of either loans or NAV? And also, if you could give some more color on what you mean by strategically working out. And then the last part of that of this question is, could you give a sense of the coverage ratio that you have right now for oil and gas downstream and oil and gas services non-performing loans?
Okay, taking it from the top. When I say significant, I'm talking about loans in the 3 to 4 billion naira range, which for me is significant. In terms of strategically working them out, I mean that I'm taking a strategic view on them. I am actually sitting down and working with each individual relationship manager and customer. It's not just a generic remedial management recovery department kind of approach. We're looking at the business, looking right down at the fundamentals of the business, and working out how we get paid back all our money. Sometimes that will involve advancing more money so they can do more business and taking a share of profit. Other times it looks at how strategically they can realize assets. Just basically the whole recovery process, various things that you look at in a recovery or remedial exercise. But what is more important is that it's something that involves very senior management and on both sides of the table, very senior management in terms of myself being involved and also the executive responsible for their portfolio in general, and dealing, again, with their managing directors and finance directors. In terms of the coverage, in terms of coverage by individual subsector, I'm afraid I don't have that with me right now. You can ask MC, you can call MC later on. She can give you the numbers. I'll get them out for her.
Okay. That's great. Could you, just one last follow-up on the strategically working out. I mean, is the key risk that is being faced by these businesses in the oil and gas, is the key risk here simply the payment of these subsidies, or is there more? If that's the only problem, surely it's a relatively easier thing to manage. But I get the sense that there's a myriad of problems that need to be worked out and sort of sat at the table to work out. I want to understand what's the key problem in the sector, or particularly for exposures.
Um, The ongoing subsidy issue is one of the areas, but I wouldn't like to stop and say that because you haven't been paid your subsidy and therefore you've got a delinquent loan with me, I should stop and wait for the subsidy to be paid. I will take steps working with you to make sure I get paid whether or not you get your subsidy. But, I mean, I'm looking at other sources, other businesses that they do. But I think the fundamental thing is that right now the major problem for that segment is the subsidy and the lack of payment. However, as a lender, I'm not prepared to sit back, cross my arms, and wait for them to get the money from the subsidy. They do have other businesses, they do have other product lines, and I need to get paid out of those.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
The next question comes from Abiola Razak from Vitiva Capital Management.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my question. I have three questions there. The first one has to do with your investment in Congo, which is DRC, DIC now. And I'm just wondering, maybe you can disclose to us the performance of that bank in the first half of the year, particularly given the tension that we've seen in Congo over the last few weeks. And I also want to clarify, maybe you've taken full financial control, because I do know that you invested in DIC through Torrent. So I'm wondering whether you're taking full financial control and what's the level of performance in that bank, and how do you see it going forward in the light of the crisis that we've seen in Congo. The second one has to do with your loan book. I'm just wondering, maybe you have an exposure to the aviation sector, because on the slide I really can't see any exposure to the transportation or maybe the aviation sector. So maybe you can just give guidance on that so that we can know the level of exposure that you have to that sector, which I see to be another counter one that we may see in the market anytime soon. Then the third one has to do with your oil and gas portfolio. I don't know, maybe you can give us a sense of the two largest obligors in terms of value, and maybe you can also give us guidance in terms of the total number of oil and gas clients that you have, particularly for the upstream sector, which I think you seem to have some level of appetite for in recent times.
Okay, what I will do is I will start with the questions on the loan book, and Andre will take on the question on DIC. Our aviation exposure doesn't show up in the chart because it's minimal, and I don't believe you have cause to worry about it. In terms of my oil and gas exposure, obviously you know I will not disclose names, so I don't know what other information you want about my two largest obligors.
I'm really not saying names. I'm talking about the value of the obligors. Say, for instance, the top two loans that you have within the upstream oil and gas, so that we can know what the IS obligor, and in case of a default, so that we can begin to see what the exposure, the loss given default can look like.
Again, well, if you try to assess the LEID, you would actually need more information than just the value, because the structure of the transactions is also very important. I think that my largest exposure is currently in the region of about $200 million. And in terms of the number of upstream clients I've got, I think we have somewhere between, I'm not actually sure, I think, yeah, under 10 at the moment, but growing. Obviously, just to put a bit of color around it, my upstream exposure is generally speaking against proven reserves. I do reserve lending, so I don't support pure exploration. All my lending is tied to and hedged by existing production at prices that have been agreed and which work in the models that we've seen. So your LEID will actually be very low.
Okay.
Andre.
Just to answer your questions with respect to our subsidiary in the Congo, BIC, we have seen quite decent first-half performance. Last year we had some unusual provisions. We've seen very strong recoveries on the back of that. And it's not in the easiest of environments because the bank has a very liquid balance sheet, 100% liquidity ratio by their definition and standards. And a lot of these are invested in BTRs, which are the treasury bills, very short to the tenure of the treasury bills. The treasury bill rates have dropped from 18% 3 years ago, unbelievably, down to sub 20%. The budget for this year was budgeted at 20%, dropped down to 1.5% at one point, but it's rebounded somewhat. Now, the good thing is that we are in line to have a 20% plus return on equity this year, in line with our 70% aspiration for the geography. So we feel good about what they're doing. The integration continues to move ahead at a very healthy clip, with a focus on strengthening the organization in terms of specialization and focus of our org structure, certain key areas such as risk management, and upgrading our capabilities in Salesforce, tools, etc. There's a very strong emphasis around retail banking and expanding our network in the Congo, and also around e-business products and IT. You asked about full financial control, and I'm not sure I quite followed you there, but we do have a 75% kind of controlling stake of the entity and control the board of the entity, and work closely with our co-shareholders who have been there for a while. You referenced the crisis in Congo. I'm not sure what you're referring to exactly, but if it's with respect to the unrest in the east of the country, that is far from Kinshasa and where most of our business locations are. We are very strong in the east, but we are strong in Kinshasa and also building up our strength in the Katanga province, where a lot of the mining and extractive industries is focused.
Okay, maybe just a follow-up to that. With respect to your expansion to other countries, should we still expect maybe foreign to some other countries, particularly within the West African region, given the somewhat capital control of the CBA?
I need to confirm, this is BC on the line, that we are not very bullish on African expansion. If we do any transaction at all before the end of the year, it will be a very small transaction in just one country. And the impact of the CBN circular on export of capital does not in any way affect it. We are very careful and we are very, very cautious of the impact of all these things on our capital and also on our own resources in terms of creation and so on.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take the next question from Ronak Gathia from Exodex. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a continuation of some of the questions asked earlier. You're saying you have some difficulty with some of your oil and gas exports.
Can you speak louder? We can barely hear you, please.
Is this better?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. Just one of my peers asked about you having difficulties with your oil and gas exposures. I was just wondering, and the head of risk management said that most of the loans are within the 3 to 4 billion range. I'd just like to know how many loans are there or what percentage of your total loan book are there, and what's your NPL cover on that? My second question is, I'd just like to know what kind of confidence level management has on the results that they have announced so far. The first quarter and the second quarter numbers that have been released, it seems there's quite a bit of restatement on a quarter-on-quarter basis. For example, when you look at the book value or the profit after tax for 2011, there's quite a significant divergence. Maybe there's an explanation to that, and if management can share that, or if not, then is it just because there's a restatement from Nigerian GAAP to IFRS, and when the end of the year comes, we might still see a significant amount of fluctuation? So what kind of confidence level can we attach to these numbers? And lastly, it seems your strategy of aggressively growing your network is paying dividends. Your market share is growing. Your deposit market share now, I'd say, is about 15-16%, which is great when yields in the money markets are at 15-16%. But I'd like to know what is management's strategy of sort of managing this market share when yields come down, say, next year?
Now, this is BC on the line. Let me confirm that the restatement that you have seen only relates to the restatement of prior year numbers and does not in any way affect the performances and the numbers for the current financial year that we're talking about. As I speak with you, we have, for the first time in a number of years, an ongoing full audit of the FIFRS numbers based on the half year results. And this is just to also revalidate whatever we have done as far as conversion to IFRS is concerned. And you can check the restatement relates to prior year numbers only in terms of IFRS. On the network growth and market share, this was something that we proactively thought about, and we knew that the market share would be threatened to some extent as we sort out the problems in the future. Now, having done that, the flight to safety is over. and we knew this was going to be over. And so the issue of where individuals or corporate organizations bank will no longer be sorted out by the issue of which bank is safe, which bank is not safe, but safety is taken for granted across the segment of the market. And that was why we proactively decided to expand our reach to various areas within the retail segment of the market, which we had huge potential. And because we have an advantage in starting that segment of the market, we thought we needed to take advantage of that circumstance to improve our market share. And that's been working for us. And we will continue to work on that strategy. We have successfully been able to reduce the cost of opening those branches, and we have a model which we know exactly where we want to go and what we want from this location. Our recent strategy essentially is to use that branch network to mobilize cheap and low-cost deposits, which is the strength of Fed Bank, and we believe that we want to retain that strength. I don't know whether the CFO has additional clarifications on the restatement, but generally the restatement has only affected 2011 and nothing. Then I can confirm that our 2012 numbers are valid and stand by those numbers. Thank you. I think that's it.
Okay. I'd just like to address your issues on the oil and gas portfolio. First of all, I think you misunderstood me. The question was, what did I mean by significant in the context of a few significant loans which are undergoing remedial management? My average size of facilities for those obligors is not 3 to 4 billion. It ranges from about 600 million up to the 4 to 5 billion naira mark. So it's not a question of the average size being 3 to 4 billion. How many do I have in terms of large obligors? Probably up to about 20 of them.
Okay.
They represent 7% of my loan book at present. NPL coverage, I don't have a figure for you right now because I haven't cut the portfolio by NPL coverage at okay. this point.
That 7% of the loan book is under stress at the moment, but it could be resolved. It should be resolved in the second half of
this
year.
Not all of it. No, I'm sorry. 7% of my portfolio is in oil and gas marketing. Yes.
Right.
It is not all under stress.
Right.
Some of it's under stress, not all. It what really depends on what kind of petroleum products they're dealing with.
Okay. What percentage would you say is under duress?
I beg your pardon, I'm reading the wrong number. It's 19%. What percentage is under duress?
Okay.
I've got, let me have a look now. Of my total NPL, 20% are in the oil and gas downstream. Of my total portfolio, 19% is oil and gas downstream.
Right.
So either you or I can do the math and work out what it is.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The next question comes from Brent Malahay from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. My first question is, what percentage of
Brent,
you
have to speak up. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
It's louder. Yeah.
Just what percentage of your branches are not profitable? And if you can just exclude the recently built ones. And is it fair to say that, what do you think will become performing and what's the timeline? Is it fair to say that the branches you're building now are in locations where you lack presence? The second question is, what is the cost of risk of that core consumer retail book? And then if you also have a number for the cost of funding for that specific book. And then lastly, internally, what is your risk appetite in terms of the cost of risk for that book? Thank you.
Now, thank you. Let me answer the question on the proportion of our branches that are not profitable. It's slightly less than 60% in number. And these were essentially branches that were opened during rural banking exercise by Central Bank. It was it was much more than the 6%. What we've done over the past 1 year to rationalize those transfers and do the case analysis on each of those transfers and determine exactly why each of those transfers was not profitable. And that's where we need to use that number, present number of less than 6%. We are taking every branch on its own merit and looking at it to exactly why each of those branches that we are dealing with it. Where we need to close down any specific one after this exercise, we will close down those branches. But at the moment, we believe that there are synergies that can still be extracted from those branches, depending on what the circumstances and what issues are. And I give you a good example. In some of those locations, sometimes maybe the branch infrastructure is too much for the size of business location. And then you feel
The line keeps on breaking.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear now. Can you just repeat the number of branches or the percentage again that aren't profitable?
It's slightly less than 6%, and we are working down the number. It was about 9%, and we've worked it down to less than 6%. And we are working on the specific branches that are affected even now. And the number of options which have worked for us in the ones that we have sorted out will still continue to be put. However, where we need to close down those branches after the field analysis branches, we will do that. We just do not want to take the lazy option of shutting down those branches without trying to extract value from the investment to those positions.
Just a follow-up. Would you have a number of branches that are below your cost of equity?
When we say non-profitable branches, these branches include the ones that are below the cost of equity. It's not just straight loss-making. There are branches that are below the threshold that you have identified at which our cost of equity is slightly less than 10%.
Could you disclose what that hurdle number is?
Sorry, the hurdle number for any branch?
I think it needs to refer to the MEC for the exact details. Yeah, you can come back again.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now, to answer your specific question on whether the new branches we are opening now are in profitable locations, yes, I can confirm to you that we are only mainly in urban and semi-urban areas, majorly specialized locations, and locations with which we are on the bank, depending on the size of the market. And we do detailed mapping analysis of those locations, including sometimes using GPRS mapping and so on. And so far, so, and we do have a detailed review of each of the books, of the performance of each of those branches on the quarterly basis. And so far, they are meeting the hurdle rates that we set as the mission. So we are quite comfortable with those strategies for branch work.
What's your targeted number of branches?
Okay, we'll answer the question.
Sure, total locations for this year, and the target number is 777, including FX service points.
No, just what's an optimal number over the medium term?
Oh, the optimal number over the medium term. I mean, let me just give you a benchmark. Relative to some of our comparable countries we've looked at, both on the continent and outside, Nigeria is about 50% penetration in terms of branches per 10,000. So you can expect that we will grow at a reasonable clip. This year there was an exceptional push given the need to kickstart the program and the opportunities we saw. But we will continue and watch the market closely and watch the performance of these branches.
So what this means is that we do not set out as initial to set a target number of branches that we want to open. We continue to survey the market and determine new locations that we need to move into. As we go on in 2012 now, we are already confirming the names and list of locations that we intend to move into, which will then be part of 20%. So it's purely driven by business experiences rather than just numbers. And that's the point. That's how it's going forward. Okay.
Are you through with the branch issue?
Yeah, just a comment. On the branch expansion, that the countries that you've mentioned, that retail credit is playing out, but for Nigeria, we view there's structural issues with the retail credit market in terms of the lack of established credit bureaus, ID system, etc. And from a liability perspective, it seems other banks with less branches are able to gather deposits and, more importantly, cheap deposits without any hassle with the lower number of branches. So I'm just trying to connect why it makes sense to continue building branches.
I don't think so. For the Nigerian environment, there is a direct positive correlation between your number of branches and the size of your retail deposits. I mean, it's quite easy and simple. There are new satellite locations coming up, Lagos, for instance, just like you would have in Abuja. You've got to follow the crowd. Okay? Now, our strategy in the retail segment of the market is not to grow the assets. It's essentially to mobilize cheap deposits from those locations and channel the utilization of those deposits into profitable lending areas. You cannot bank people in those locations unless you have presence those locations. Yes, there are opportunities for non-brick-and-mortar service outlets, but there is very little you can do in terms of opening new accounts and doing some sales in those locations without having physical presence in those locations. But the strategy is not to use those outlets straight soon, but to mobilize low-cost. And it's something that we have thought through, and it's working for us very, very well.
Okay.
I will talk very quickly on the cost of risk in the retail portfolio we had that you are asking me about. Unfortunately, those are numbers we'd have to come back to you on because I don't generally cut the portfolio in terms of cost of risk by business segment. I do look at the non-performing loan ratios, but I don't look at the cost of risk by business segment. I will look at it and give the MC an answer that she can give to you later on.
Okay.
I believe the same thing would go for the cost of funds. Again, I don't think we look at the cost of funds by portfolio. My risk appetite for the retail and consumer loan book is that I'm expecting to hold something at the 8-9% non-performing loan ratio. I'm not sure whether that addresses your question, but that's the kind of level that I'm comfortable with in that book.
And what coverage would you generally have for that loan book? Especially, I suppose it would be difficult because you're implementing IFRS now.
Exactly. So you'd have to give me a bit of time to get to the IFRS. But then bear in mind the fact that the bulk of my loans in that segment are either structured against salaries or they are asset-backed. It's just that the realization process does take time.
And
so even under IFRS, I probably will find that the collateral I hold will be of value, which it currently is not.
Under Nigerian GAAP, what would the coverage be?
Again, I would need to come back to you because I don't cut the portfolio in that manner. I cut the portfolio in terms of performing and non-performing. I don't cut it in terms of the classification levels within the non-performing book. I can give you that information, but I don't have it right now.
Okay, I'll wait for that information from Yemisi, but just another way to look at it, if your lending rate is 20% post the cost of risk and post the cost of funding, what is your minimum that you would want to get?
If my lending rate is 20+% net of, it's not net of cost of risk and cost of funding.
The 20%
is... You're basically asking me what kind of margin I'm comfortable with on the retail book.
Net of the funding and the cost of risk.
I think a 7-10%. I think a 7-10% margin is reasonable. Don't you?
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Nindubushi Obike of Stanbic IBTC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. I have three questions, basically. On slide 15, your Tier 2 capital seems to have increased by 4 billion. Perhaps you could explain if there was any capital raise in the quarter or it's just surprising. My next question has to do with the staff rationalization exercise you mentioned on slide 10. Perhaps you could explain more how much is it going to cost, what's the good level of impact in Q3, so that we can adjust our numbers. Then my last question has to do with your your NPL book, your NPL versus your loan book. I did some analysis, and it seems the real estate lending sticks out. I have a level of delinquency of about 21% for real estate.
Sorry, can you speak up? I can't hear you.
My third question has to do with your comparison of your sectoral lending and the NPL breakdown sector basis. Yeah, I have your lending to the real estate sector at about 25 billion and NPLs from that side are about 5 billion. That gives me about 1% level of delinquency. So I would like some explanations from you as to what you are doing about these loans and why you didn't sell those loans to AMCON in the first place, please. Thank you.
I would love to answer you, but I can't make out what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Okay, I'll start all over again. My first question has been... Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll start all over. My first question has to do with slide 15, where you showed the growth in your capital, your tier 1 capital and tier 2 capital. I noticed that your tier 2 capital increased by 4 billion. Perhaps you could explain it to you, there was any capital extra tier 2 capital raised during the quarter or just repricing of the capital you have there. Then my second question has to do with staff rationalization. That you said that is referred to in slide 10. Perhaps we shed more light there. How much is it going to cost? What's going to be the impact in Q3, like you mentioned there? And then my last question has to do with your NPLs. Your NPL, your lending to the real estate sector. My analysis shows that your lending to that sector stands at about 35 billion, while the delinquent loans currently at 5 billion, which shows maybe about 21% of the lending has been delinquent. Perhaps you could explain what you're doing to those loans and why you didn't sell them to AMCON in the first place.
Okay. This is CFO. Let me take the question on the staff organization. Every staff rationalization, any of our establishment, will cost a certain sum. The one I would just add is going to cost the bank a little below 10 billion naira. Of course, this will be mitigated by a couple of things. We expect there will be reduced staff cost. Less of these rationalized staff. Going forward, we start with the second half of the year. And the number two point is that we expect increasing productivity, which will also mitigate some portion of the cost of staff rationalization. But the absolute amount of the need to be those entities.
Okay, and
definitely we all know that in the long run, this exercise will be beneficial to the bank.
Remy, I will answer the questions on the credit portfolio and the real estate question.
On the real estate portfolio, I trust your math, the 21% ratio. What am I doing about it? I, of course, remain in remedial mode. I continue to engage the customers. I continue to ensure and to seek buyers where necessary. Some of them are recent defaulters. So in terms of why I didn't sell to AMCON, the AMCON window closed in December of last year. That's 6 months ago, so things have happened in the last 6 months. And also, quite honestly, where the price that was AMCON offered for a loan was not what I deemed to be reasonable, I did not take it. So in all cases, it's a question of which method yields the better return to the bank.
Oh. And sorry, let me interject here. When you finance the real estate development, it is unlikely that you will expect repayment when the estate is not completed. So in this particular instance, what we are trying to do is to ensure that all impediments towards the completion of the estate are removed. It's only when the estate is completed, of course, there are buyers for those properties, but the buyers will not put in their money. So they are quite structured that in fact we would work out smiling at the end of the completion of those projects. because they are quite in very good locations and they attract some significant interest, but subject to the completion of those structures. Are you satisfied?
Yeah, but those real estate loans, are you seeing any improvements or are they getting worse, please?
No, they are not getting worse. They are real estate developments and they are not loans to individuals essentially. Okay? They are loans granted for development of estates or mini estates as it were. And what we've been trying to do is to make sure that the necessary impediments towards the completion are removed. There are obstacles for this project. We can confirm to you. So all we've been working is to make sure that we work with developers to complete those structures and then complete sales.
But then the final...
Also need to marry... Go on.
Well, I thought you were done with that question. I wanted to remind you about my first question on Tier 2 Capital.
Tier 2 Capital? The CFO will take that.
What was the question on Tier 2 Capital?
Okay, the investment in the Tier 1 Capital was actually the payment of a dividend, while the movement of $4 billion in Tier 2 Capital actually relates to our FBN UK, where they actually took some funds in March this year to date.
Also, if you could confirm, are you comfortable with the current level of capital adequacy ratio at 15%, or do you have any plans to boost this ratio further?
Well, like I mentioned during the presentation, our current capital adequacy ratio is at 15.29%, but with our planned retention of higher profit, retention of profit, and the de-risking, further de-risking of our balance sheet, we hope to actually improve this to the range of 17% and 18%. And with that, we are covered for this planned business growth short term.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. We will take our next question from Notando Nebele of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the call. I just have a few follow-up questions, and you may have answered these before, but unfortunately the line is very bad, so we are having problems hearing you. First question on asset quality. Could you give us a provision number, your provisions level for at the half-year mark for the group, not just for the bank? Secondly, on your costs, just a little bit more color. I think you did speak about the costs. You know, your operating costs, if we look at them, staff costs were up, I think, 21% year-on-year, and your other costs were down about 19%. But given your branch rollout, where are you actually getting cost savings from that are giving you this muted cost base? And how much more is there to come out of your cost optimization program? My last question is on the NAV. The NAV declined 4%. Year to date, and I just wanted to confirm whether this was due to dividend payments made out in the first part of the year. Thank you.
The movement in operating costs, if you look at it year on year, we actually had a 29% movement in operating costs, and I actually did made mention of the fact that this came mainly from business expansion. Given the fact that between June 2011 to date, we've had over 80 new locations. And of course, we also add additional POS terminals, ATM, and other alternate channels. All these are staff cost locations. At all these locations, have to start with new recruitment, which is why you see
I'm really sorry, but the line is very bad. I can't hear you very well. Maybe if you speak up a little, it keeps breaking, so I'm just hearing words here and there.
Okay, can you hear me clearly now?
Yeah, that's a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay. What I was trying to say here is the 29% growth in our operating costs year on year. That's after 2011 and after 2012. And I did mention in my presentation earlier that this actually was driven by increase in our business locations. Between June last year and now, we've had over 80 new business locations. And of course, we also add additional ATMs, POS, and other alternative channels just to make the business closer to our customers and increase the level of activity in our locations. All these have fast cost implications, and also have operating overhead locations. For each of these new locations, we have a minimum staffing of about 12 per location. And given about 80, 90 new locations, we are talking of close to 150 new staff for these locations. And in terms of the operating overhead, we also have to, run these locations, cost of energy, cost of security, and all that. That's what led to the increase on our operating overhead. But we also were able to make savings in some of the overhead lines, which you also mentioned while you were asking the question. Those are actually the results, consequences of those cost reduction strategies that we've implemented the past few years. What we expect is that as each of these new locations grows in terms of business volume and they contribute more to revenue of the bank, they're going to have positive impact on our cost to income ratio. But in the short run, they may actually look high, but towards the end of the year, we'll be seeing reduction in this cost and an improvement in our cost to income ratio. That is a bit I cannot speak about our cost of operations for the period.
In terms of your other question on the loan side was what our provisions were for half year for the group. If you look at page 7, you'll see there was 10.6 billion naira for the group for the half year under NGAAP. I'm not sure whether there was anything I missed in your question.
My other question was just on the NAV. The decline in the NAV, is that due to dividend payments?
Yes. Dividend payments actually led to the reduction in the net asset value between Q1 and Q2. It's mainly different here.
Okay, and just one more question, if I may, just in terms of the accounting, now that you're using IAS 39, are you taking the difference between the provisions raised from the impairment charge on IAS 39 and the CBN guidelines? Is that going to be taken through the statutory reserves, or how are you dealing with that?
Yes, that's what we do.
Is that done throughout the year, or will that be done at the year end when your numbers are audited?
Well, that will be when the numbers are audited.
So it will be when the numbers are audited?
What we have used for this presentation are all based on NGAAP. By the time we actually give you the details of the IFRS, we're going to do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our next question from Kunte Ojo of Harding Lovner. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have just one particular question. If you look at your slide 20 and compare it to your slide 27.
I'm sorry, but we can't actually hear you. You have
Can
to speak up
now?
A bit.
Can you hear me now?
No, you have to speak up a little bit more. That's better.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, all right, good. Just looking at your slide 20 and slide 27, your NPL coverage seems to be different. Can you please explain?
Your voice is going away again.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. The NPL coverage you have on slide 20 is 67.9, and what you have on slide 27 is 98.8. Just wondering why we have that difference. That's my first question. The second is around your loan growth for full year 2012. I know half year you're already like around 19-20%. Just wondering if, you know, the loan growth is going to be higher for the full year, or, you know, I heard someone talk about the leveraging just now, so is that going to be lower? And then if you can just please give a guidance as well on your net interest margin for the full year, your cost to income that you expect given the sort of staff rationalization exercise that you're going through, as well as your NPL guidance for the full year, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take my bit first. In terms of the difference between slide 20 and slide 27,
yes.
Basically what you're looking at is the difference between the IFRS number and the NGAAP number.
Oh, okay.
On slide 20, we're showing you IFRS ratios.
Okay.
Whereas the bulk of the presentation, including slide 27, is on NGAAP.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's helpful. What about your loan guidance for the year?
Okay, the issue on the loan. I did say earlier that our year-to-date growth is about 17% currently.
Yes.
However, we retain our full-year guidance of about 15% because whilst we're growing, we're adding on new loans right now. There are loans that will be paid down between now and the year-end. So I anticipate coming in at year-end close to the 15% mark that we're talking about.
Yeah, so what impact is that going to have on your asset yield then?
On my asset yield?
Yeah, for the full year.
I think, quite honestly, given the current interest rate regime, that my asset yield will probably pick up a little bit. So I don't expect that the reduction in loan growth would have any significant impact on our returns.
Oh, so you're anticipating the fact that you can match those sort of rates from your interbank placements and sort of treasury bills in the market?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. Thanks. So in that regard, can I assume that your NIM will sort of be around?
On the net interest margin guidance, I think we still retain original guidance. Under the NGAAP, we originally guided on 7% net interest margin for 2012. And we currently achieve 7.5%. For IFRS, we guided on 8.5%.
What
the actual?
Oh, what? Sorry, I can't hear you clearly. Sorry, I can't hear you clearly. Can you repeat that, please?
Okay. For the net interest margin guidance, we originally guided at 7% for NGAAP, but our actual was 7.5%.
Okay.
First half of the year. For IFRS, we got it on 8.5 and we went to achieve 8.3%. So I will confirm that we're still retaining the guidance of 7% for NIR under NGAAP, 8.5%.
And
our NPL guidance for the year is remains at 3-5%.
Is what?
You asked for the NPL guidance for the year.
Yeah.
We maintain that at 3-5%, somewhere between 3-5%.
3-5%. And what about cost to income, given the staff rationalization?
Cost to income, 60.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
As we have no further questions, I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. BC Onasanya for any additional or closing remarks.
Just to thank every participant for taking part in this conference call, we'd like to assure you that we have the management team and the board that remains focused on making sure that we retain our leadership position. We will continue to defend our leadership in Nigeria. We will continue to extend that leadership to areas in which we believe we should extend them to. We have seen improvements in our half-year numbers. We believe that these numbers should be sustained. Of challenges and complex environment constraints. We believe that at the end of the year, we'll be able to post some very return on equity numbers within the guided framework of 20% back of turbulent market. We believe that presently, the first bank share undervalued trading at less than one time price, even in relation to the earnings per share relative to the first bank share, I think that. There's a very strong case for potential upside as far as investment is concerned. We remain confident that we retain our leadership and possibly could extend that the assent. I'd like to thank everybody as well for seeing you at the end of Q3. Very good numbers. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.